framework of a university, that they work with, provide the technology or the development or the work in a university, how to relate to the field, especially given the pool and the need. And our first speaker is David Vader. David is at Messiah College, and as you know, he directs the course, is part of the collaboratory activity that you will discuss in some detail. His background is in mechanical engineering. He transferred that from my background. I love that.
I have spent 5 years at IBM in electronic cooling, 14 years faculty member at the Messiah College, former chair of the engineering department, and now a co-founder of Collaboratory, which is his topic of discussion. David, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you very much, Ken. I'd like to begin with a story, part of my story. When I was 33, I was working for IBM. I was successful, I think, in every way that I was supposed to be. I'm making a ridiculous amount of money. I had a PhD. But I began to wonder what engineering had to do with my Christian faith. And for me, it became a question of stewardship. I found that the demands of my job took a great deal of my life's energy, and I wasn't quite sure what it had to do with my Christian faith. I felt that it needed to be more than just a way to pay the bills. I finally came to the place in my faith where I asked God to lead rather than just to bless the decisions that I had made. And the outcome of that was that I came to Messiah College. That's a long story. I don't have time to tell this afternoon. But I came to the college with a powerful sense of God's leading and a vague concept that using engineering, that I ought to use engineering to serve others like doctors and lawyers do, give something back. So I began to network with a number of organizations and was eventually invited by SIM, an interdenominational Christian Mission Sending organization, to install a solar power system for a medical clinic in rural Burkina Faso in West Africa. And I naively thought, with great enthusiasm, that all of my students would want to do this. That I would be able to hand-pick the absolute best students, and of course you know already, they didn't want to do it. Neither did the next ones I asked, or the next ones. I want to do this. In fact, none of the students that I personally invited, young adults who had elected to attend a Christian college, were interested in this project. All right, I'm going to tell you the end of the story at the end of the presentation. I will tell you that we did build that power plant, and out of that first project came the Collaboratory for Strategic Partnerships and Applied Research, and I'd like to tell you what we're doing, how we operate, why we exist, and then finally some things that I've learned from this experience. It is on, but it's not working. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah, okay.
Great, thanks.
Recording, yeah. I thought she was going to come in. Go ahead.
Okay, so we're going to start with the program of the collaboratory. We were guided by a couple of key ideas here. First of all, to fulfill biblical mandates to foster justice, empower the poor, reconcile adversaries, and care for the earth in the context of academic engagement. So there's a lot of service was happening on my campus, but it was separated almost completely from academics and the academic pursuits of students. And so we want to focus on connecting students in the thing that they're studying, the careers they're preparing for, to service. And we do this by partnering with organizations, communities in our region and around the world for projects in mathematical and information sciences, engineering, and business. So I'm in the School of Mathematics, Engineering, and Business at Messiah. We've been going 10 years on now, depending on how you measure it. We have over 100 students working on interdisciplinary teams. Our advisors are faculty, staff, non-faculty educators at the college. We have a number of alums who are so excited about their experience when they were students. They live in the area and continue to advise projects. And we have community people, professionals, people from churches who help with the work. So we have a strong extracurricular base that we're developing and now have about a one-third overlap with coursework. Some of our partners include CURE, an organization that builds hospitals for disabled children, you know, Habitat for Humanity. Hope International is a microfinance organization. Handicap en Avant is in Burkina Faso. It's a mission of SIM that works with persons, physically challenged persons. Mission Aviation Fellowship. The Monitoring Cooperatives are in the Basque region of Spain, begun by a priest, a Catholic priest, who thought there must be some third way between hardcore capitalism and communism, and has developed a mid-cap business model, a worker-owned corporation. So we think this may be something that would be helpful for people who are asking what happens after micro-enterprise. And then World Vision is the major partner. We work in a number of places. We began in West Africa, and I think the locus of our work continues to be in West Africa. We're doing some things in Central America, and we're trying to do, we're doing some good things locally, and we need to do more locally in our region. So this is our vision statement: increasing hope and transforming lives through education, collaboration, innovation, and service. And I've selected only projects in technology, since this is science and this is appropriate technology session. But we've been involved in mobility and water access technologies to help persons with physically challenged persons in Burkina Faso. We're building our third aircraft. This is a light sport aircraft that we think has potential for very short takeoff and landing, getting in and out of very difficult locations for relief and development work. We have a communications group that does satellite messaging and GPS tracking work for small aircraft again. First project was a solar power plant. We've done a lot of that, and we're doing some village-level sustainable water system design in Honduran villages. Wanted to just highlight two recent projects that are really taking off: our LEAP database project in partnership with World Vision. You can imagine World Vision has what they call Area Development Programs, or ADPs, and an ADP manager is the frontline ministry person for World Vision. And the question is, how do they track ministry outcomes to know whether or not the program actually delivered the benefits that they set out to deliver? The World Vision, the organization, came up with a framework for assessment, but how does this frontline manager actually operationalize that framework? And so our students and the faculty advisor are developing a database to help with that work. We received funding from World Vision to do a prototype in two of their national offices in Africa for that. And then this is another World Vision partnership, and with World Vision's help, we received some funding from the Conrad Hilton Foundation to study water access needs for persons with disabilities in Mali, and World Vision has been involved in putting in village wells, but very little has been done to be concerned with the question of how do persons with disabilities access the water, transport the water to their place where they live, and then use the water where they live. Okay, so that's a little bit about what we're doing. How do we operate? We have some guiding commitments. First of all, we're committed to projects that enable participants to share Christ in life, word, and deed through excellence in the academic discipline. So we invite our faculty and students to consider all out of all of the things that they might do in their discipline that would be interesting, stimulating, professionally, to consider and value those that that would seem to follow Christ. Students who share project leadership with educators and who learn by seeing their teachers in action. So it's really a very different educational model than the classroom, and I'm going to say a little bit more about that. That's a very key point in the next slide. Project teams that include students from multiple years of study for peer mentoring and sustainability. So we have a significant problem. 100% of our employees leave us every 4 years. That's a significant problem, right? So we have to be continuously bringing in the new generation of leaders and have our outgoing students peer mentor their own replacements. Long-term commitments. So this is what makes us very different from short-term missions and very different from traditional course-based projects. We realized that we can't do anything that really matters if we're going to be confined by the semester or even the academic year. And so we've come up with a structure that I'll share a little bit with you here that allows us to both engage the classroom, engage academics, but to continue effort, continue partnership, and work on projects that span multiple years and multiple generations of students. And then finally, and perhaps most importantly, all of this happens in the context of Christian discipleship to enable reflection that sharpens vocational vision, fosters servant leadership, and nurtures courage to act on conviction. So a little bit more about shared leadership. So I said that being an advisor mentor is a little different than being a classroom teacher. It's an advisor mentor assigned to each student leader, but your job is to work yourself out of a job, to increasingly empower that student leader and equip the student leader, but to walk that fine line and intervene if you need to protect the long-term health of the work and the client's interest. And these include, as I said, educators, alumni, professionals, and peers. And so then the students are, and this sounds a little strange, but they're empowered to have a legitimate opportunity to fail. Okay, you can fail in a class and still get a B, right? And that's pretty good. But if we're doing solar energy in Africa or pumps or communication or airplanes, right, we better not get a B on the airplane, right? It's got to stay up in the air. So they have to understand that. And in the collaboratory, the advisor empowers and protects, but the students have a legitimate opportunity to make some of their own authentic decisions. And then I mentioned they peer mentor their replacement. A little bit on organizations. We have groups that maintain a knowledge base and support projects related by a common theme. And then groups sponsor projects. So groups can last for a long time. Projects are time-oriented, a year, 2 years, 3 years, activities with measurable outcomes. And then the teams are the people who complete the projects. There are several types. We have a staff group, and our staff team provide internal services in the collaboratory, human resources, finance, information management, marketing, logistics. So we have people from business, but English majors, people that want to do films for us and so forth, they're all involved through the staff group. Application groups do work for projects for external clients. I'm sorry, application teams and then site teams draw from multiple groups for on-site project work. So this is our organizational structure. To show that briefly, give you an idea of what we're about. You can see down here in the bottom, these are all the groups that we have right now. And the one that's different is the staff group. These teams provide internal services to support the rest of these groups. We have internal funding. I'm half-time engineering professor, half-time director of the collaboratory, so the college out of their operational budget pays for half of my salary to be the collaboratory director. I have an administrative assistant. We get space, the value of the participation of other faculty members, and support from campus departments. So we externally fund a collaboratory manager staff position, all of our equipment supplies, student wages. Faculty have the option, if they can get the funding, to have a teaching load reduction, summer stipends, and then, of course, we pay for travel. So we do have some funds from the operations budget of the collaboratory of the college. We have a very small endowment that we're trying to grow to provide a revenue stream apart from external funding. And there's some other internal funds that entrepreneur and faculty members can get their hands on. External sources, believe it or not, when I started that first project, I sent out letters to my friends and family asking to support this, and we still do that. And in fact received significant funding from a number of people who supported us and like what we're doing over the years. We have a number of congregations. We've partnered with churches and we're in the budgets of a number of congregations. We've received major gifts from a number of people, businesses, client organizations like World Vision have funded us, and then more recently they've been successful with some foundations and some very generous gifts in kind. How do we make all this work? We have very high expectations for our project teams. We find that we have to tell our students that it's about like being on a varsity sports team, and that they need to consider that when they get involved. And so saying what the expectation is up front is critical. We use a variety of methods for spiritual formation, some common readings, weekly worship and speakers, prayer breakfasts, retreats, and so forth. We have a number of equipping activities. We have a new members and advisors orientation workshop, a leadership class, and then a leadership workshop that happens the week before school starts. So I'm getting ready for that right now. All the leaders come back and we get ready for the year. And then we try to operate professionally and be accountable as an organization. We have weekly goal setting and reporting, and we're working on member participation tracking and online project management. And we do have some summer internships. I'll just say that for site teams, not everybody that works in the collaboratory goes someplace. We need more people to work on the projects than actually get to travel internationally, and the expectation for site teams is even higher. I invite you to visit our collaboratory wiki, collaboratory.masai.edu. It's not a PR website, but this is an operations tool where we document our processes. Again, we have 100% turnover every 4 years, so we have to be like ISO 9000 certified with all our processes documented, or we go belly up quickly. Project data, we use Cumulus to archive images, have a server for documents. And we just implemented Civi CRM. It's an open source database for managing our partner risk. Curriculum integration is a key direction that we're taking now to build on a foundation of non-credit student participation to connect the collaboratory to what I call the local economy of academic and faculty load credit. You like that, Walt? All right, excellent. You can use that if you want. So we're using the collaboratory then, which began in the extracurricular, to resource or subcontract course-based project work. So instead of just sort of cooking up an imaginary project for my students in materials engineering now, I actually get a real project with a real client. It's a little piece of a bigger project from the collaboratory, and it enriches what's happening in the class. And then we're doing that in all kinds of different courses there, and we're doing it in a big way in the engineering department. We have something called the Integrated Projects Curriculum, or IPC, that we just began, and here are the courses that it's involved in. Basically, it's four different semesters that you get credit for being on a project team, and two seminars that run in parallel where we talk about the philosophy of technology, faith issues, and so forth. We received a major grant from the WM Tech Foundation to help us with transition costs, hire a manager of the collaboratory, and award internal grants to faculty members to help grow the program and help us to become sustainable. Why do we exist? The mission of our college, you'd expect us to care about maturity of intellect, character, and Christian faith. I love the way our mission ends, though. We're not becoming mature as an end unto itself in intellect, character, and faith, but for lives of service, leadership, and reconciliation. How do I do that in a classroom? I don't know in the classroom. To the collaboratory, engagement is great for developing professional abilities. We're strategic in the projects we choose. So we not only become technically competent, but we are increasing the vocational vision of our students. We're exploring what it means to be called by God and what are some of the different ways that God calls us. But sometimes we know that we have ability, we even have a vision or a dream, and we're still not able to act on what we want to do. And so finally, by doing it together in the collaboratory, we think that we're helping our students to develop the courage or the faith to act on their convictions. So the collaboratory connects them to the resources of profession, academic disciplines for Christian service and discipleship, and it enables educators to connect their scholarship projects directly to student learning. And it provides an organization-based learning environment where students apply, test, and build on classroom learning. So if you're familiar with the cold learning cycle, classroom learning happens in here, abstract conceptualization and reflective observation, and collaboratory lets us work in the other areas as well. All right, back to my story. The collaboratory challenges a number of our assumptions. Recall the students who didn't want to get involved. Well, in the end, God gave me two great students. One of them is returning this fall as a full-time faculty member in computer science, and the other one runs a nuclear power plant called Three Mile Island. You might have heard of that. And I'm kind of glad he's there running it, since it has to be there. But what happened to me in not being able to recruit students at the beginning turned out to be somewhat prophetic. My greatest challenge right now, it's not finding projects, certainly. It's not really even money. It's finding enough students and, honestly, enough faculty members who want to do this work. They're willing to do this work. That's the greatest challenge. These students who said no to me at the beginning knew instinctively what I've been sort of figuring out ever since, that the vision of obeying God at work is incompatible with some of our contemporary idols. And that's what I'd like to conclude with. So, first of all, resisting the temptation to what I'll call academic respectability. The president of my college once envisioned our becoming a Christian Harvard. I may have said that tongue-in-cheek, I don't know, but I think there are many who'd be comfortable with the Christian Harvard metaphor to guide excellence in the Christian Academy. So if we want to become excellent, however, I would observe that, first, that Harvard is not benchmarking institutions of Christian higher education. Harvard possesses the confidence of mission and identity that enables them to lead, and they lead simply by being Harvard. It's very little to do with the number of Harvard wannabes. So I'm not saying that we don't have anything to learn from Harvard, only that what they have to offer us is fundamentally limited by the vastly different commitments of our institution. But I'm concerned that some Christian colleges and universities covet inclusion in the inner circle of elite secular scholars and institutions, and such desires always create unwritten connections between our methods of commitment and those of other institutions. Rejecting the organization's demands of scientific rationalism, or I think what Donald Shoon and the reflective practitioner called technical rationalism. We know that many of the early scientists were theists. They studied the material world as a kind of theology, seeking to understand the mind of the creator through the creation. But when science appeared to explain things that heretofore only God seemed to be able to explain, some bright philosophers proposed that maybe God set it all up and then withdrew and was no longer engaged. That, of course, is deism, which is an unstable philosophy because you don't have to be a mental giant to figure out that a God that's not actively involved is irrelevant. And so the wealthy West kind of spiraled downward into naturalism, nihilism, and then we spent a long time trying to deal with nihilism, existentialism, all kinds of other things. But we academics kind of stuck with naturalism. Maybe not philosophically, but in our organizational commitments. And at least since the German research university of the 19th century, we've been organized around a scientific epistemology. So we value the detached scholar, independent specialization, reductionism, and we've even done this in our educational programs. So we have different educators to educate the mind, to educate the spirit, and educate the heart in completely different parts of the institution, and I hardly ever work with those educators. So the collaboratory, we're trying to pull all of those different kinds of educators in the classroom and in college ministries and in student life all together. We're trying to share the gospel of Christ in life, word, and deed, because there's no lasting help apart from Him. So this is a unique opportunity that we have to do. We have the Christian Academy. I'm looking forward to Bill's presentation. We have different resources and different opportunities available to us. Bill's at Purdue. I'm at a Christian college. I can't do some things that he does, and he can't do some things that I can do. And so this is one thing that I think is important for us. And lastly, expecting discipleship. Our mission is to the church, and we've had a very difficult time, I think, challenging our students to be able to expect that it's going to perhaps cost them something to follow Christ. And this, I think, is one of the big discussions that we're having in the collaboratory right now. So I think I've exhausted my time, and we want to leave a little room for
some
for
questions. Yes, thank you, David. Questions? Yes.
My question relates. is the fact that frequently faculty buy into a program like this is tied to whether they're going to get credit for tenure and promotion. So how has that worked out with your university?
Okay. Well, we're very fortunate, first of all, in that the requirement to be promoted to associate professor at Messiah College is you have to be evaluated at the highest level in teaching, okay, and be acceptable in scholarship or institutional service, and then full professor is one of the other two. Second, we, as an institution, have made a commitment to identify as advanced scholarship, the highest level of scholarship that our tenure and promotion committee would evaluate, to be more than just publishing papers. Now, that doesn't mean that it's all been easy. The faculty has still been very concerned about this, and we're actively engaged in working with the college administration to define specifically how this kind of work can count for the most advanced kind of scholarship if it doesn't lead to a paper. We've already said that one requirement is there has to be dissemination, and two, there has to be accountability. But the accountability, the dissemination doesn't necessarily have to be a paper. It could be an implementation of a technology, and the accountability could be some kind of a report or survey from the client. So we're actively pursuing that, trying to get that language into our faculty handbook.
Good question.
How many faculty members went out on the team in the past year?
In the past year, wow. I should know those, but I don't. Right off. I would say approximately 10. We had 5 different teams, maybe 10 or 12 different faculty members in the last year. The cycle for trips, I tend to travel to West Africa myself. I still work in Burkina Faso every other year. It's a huge commitment to spend 4 or 5 weeks in the summer in West Africa. So, about 12 faculty members, and then that'd be maybe 30, 35 students.
Okay. I guess this question is serving to complement Bill Jordan's question. I'm thinking about accreditation. Do you say you're a McCampbell engineer?
Yes, I'm McCampbell.
So, yeah. I'm thinking about ABET, and this easily satisfies the engineering and code of conduct, but what about social responsibility and awareness and ethics and so on? Do you find it easier or more difficult to satisfy ABET accreditors on a program shaped around this?
Well, we were doing work like this when I was department chair, and I took us through Criteria 2000 for the first time in 2000, I think it was. And so we didn't have the IPC, the curriculum integration, but they saw the vast amount of extracurricular opportunities our students had and gave us a very positive report. And then we were just revisited this last year, and IPC was just coming online. We shared it with our evaluation team, and they also were very positive. So that's anecdotal, I guess. It's just two teams, but the two teams that have visited us and who've been doing this have been very supportive.
They're not necessarily
accreditors from
Christian colleges. Oh, no. No. That feedback is kind of work. It's a pretty uniform
national.
Very solid. That's beginning to catch on so many. We have one more question.
I'm coming from a completely different background. We have no Christian colleges. We have no. And we have a very strongly controlled state system. I'm less worried now than having heard some of the questions to your answer. I mean, we have a very rigorous method of assessment, peer assessment by other academics and other universities, on professional organizations.
Absolutely.
Because, obviously, as Christians, we want.
Absolutely, that's our first witness.
I think I'm much happier now, having heard all of your responses.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more.
But it's a very different situation from anything we have in the UK. We are totally 1990 state organized.
would there be a room in the UK for a church sponsor or an NGO that could do this kind of work in Jesus' name? Be more open about that.
It would be interesting to know whether
it could happen.
I can't see it, actually. But maybe we, you know, what we need is one or two people with vision. And I think if you could get guarantee some strong ongoing financial support, the answer is probably yes. I'm not defending that person.
Well, you can continue some of that discussion if you want to do that.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is... Wait a second.
Let me restart this.